Kia ora, I'm Maria. I'm Māori and Pakeha.
And I'm Kate, and I'm Iranian Australian.
And you're listening to Being Biracial.
It's the podcast all about navigating the world as a biracial person.
Today we have something really, 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 really special for you. It is a live podcast.
Yes, we held a live podcast in collaboration with the Wheeler Center and The Round, and we are so excited that you get to listen to it.
We are interviewing AFLW champion Darcy Vesio.
And one of our favorite comedians, Aurelia St. Clair. It's basically an insight to what it's like to sit around and have a chat with us on our couches at our houses. So enjoy.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Hi guys, how are you doing?
Happy Nowruz, everyone. I know you've been very excited for Persian New Year to roll around. It is officially the year 1403. I don't know if you've across it, but basically Persian calendar, like no Jesus, no before Christ stuff. So it is the year 1403. So welcome, you're celebrating.
And before we get into a little bit more about Nowruz in general, I want to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the lands that we all have the pleasure of live, laugh and loving on today. And we are on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung land, so I want to pay my respects to their elders past, present and those to come. In this country, sovereignty has never been ceded. As Manuhiri, as visitors to this land, I think it's really important that we pay respects wherever we can, because it always was and always will be Aboriginal land, right?
So tonight we have a very exciting lineup for you. We're really excited because a live podcast is always such a treat for us, because normally we're just like sitting in our houses talking to someone or in the dungeon at Footscray Community Arts. So it's so exciting that people can like laugh at our funny jokes.
Feedback. We've got live feedback in the room with us today. So I'm Maria, by the way. Hi, Maria Birch-Moranga. I'm Māori and Pakeha. Now Pakeha is the Māori word for white. I just like to sprinkle a little bit of spice on it, right? And here I have my darling co-host and friend, Kate Robinson. Kate Robinson, what's your mix?
So I'm Iranian Australian, which is why we have this very exciting setup that I thought I would like explain a little bit about today, because it is Persian New Year, Nowruz, and one of the things we do is we have this table called Hafsin, the seven S's. And so they're all different things that symbolise stuff for the New Year, and in Farsi, like all of Hyacinth is symbol. So, you know, everything starts with the letter S. So it just felt, you know, because we're having this conversation about race and identity and culture, it felt important to honour it in my own way and to have all of you experience Hafsin. We also had some Persian food before we came out here, so we're a bit sleepy, to be honest.
Pretty full, yeah, pretty full. Hopefully the mic doesn't pick up on my burps later. Now, normally we make a podcast, right? It's called Being Biracial. It's about being biracial, right? And like Kate said, we're just normally sequestered away in our little rooms talking to ourselves. But tonight we have some really, really cool guests that we are so honoured to bring out. Kate, who are we going to talk to first?
We are going to talk to Darcy Vesio, which is very exciting for me personally because I have been a Carlton supporter my entire life. A long-suffering Carlton supporter, I would say. AFLW is really bringing it around for me. So it's such a treat to get to talk to Darcy.
Yep. And we also have a really fantastic comedian, Aurelia St. Clair, who's going to be doing a little bit of a set for us later before we have a kōrero, before we have a chat with them. So super excited to be chatting to them today.
Yeah, so thank you all for coming. And yeah, let's bring out AFLW star Darcy Vesio.
Beep, 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 beep. Hey, Darcy, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Now, if any of you have listened to our podcast before, we always ask the same first question. And Kate, what is that question?
Darcy, what is your mix?
Well, my mum is Chinese and my dad is Italian. Mm. So, Chitalian.
No one has ever said that to us before. So how did they meet?
Well, so my mum's from Melbourne area and my dad's from like Wangaratta, Myrtleford area. And my mum did her first teaching rounds in Worali, which is a small country town just outside of Wangaratta. And I think, yeah, I know they. My mum went out one night and dad was working the bar. He was at the Albion, if anyone's been to Wang, been to the Albion.
It's where you fall in love.
It's a beautiful place. And, yeah, that's how they met.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they had you.
Yes, just me. No brothers. No, I've got two brothers.
And did you grow up in Wangaratta?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a farm in Markwood, which is, if you've been to that area, it's really close to Milawa.
Okay.
So Brown Brothers Cheese Factory.
Yeah.
But yeah, Markwood's like 5 minutes down the road and there's nothing there apart from our house.
Tourist destination. So you guys must have been one of the few like multicultural families in that area. Did you feel that when as a child or no?
Not particularly. I think like I went to a really small primary school. So
it's how small? I went to a small primary school.
Okay, how small?
Competition.
Yeah. Numbers game.
How many people went to your primary school?
When I started, there were 35, but when I left, there were 19.
In the whole school?
In the whole school.
Okay, you win.
So it was like
you win. There were 50 when I graduated my primary school.
That's big.
Whole school.
I know everyone.
19.
Yeah. So it was. By the time I was in grade six, there were like five grade sixes, four grade fives, three grade fours, and then it just dwindled down to like one prep, one grade one, one grade two.
And so like quite a large chunk of that school was your family.
Yeah, exactly.
So Darcy's like, I didn't feel different. There were many multicultural kids. A third of the population was your mix.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it was quite, I felt like it was a little community in itself and... Yeah. I always say that to play any game or anything at like play lunch or play time or lunch.
Recess.
recess. You say recess in high school, but it's
okay,
primary school.
Play lunch,
so
play lunch.
Play lunch. you'd have to like really hustle hard to get everyone involved. Like you couldn't play a two-sided game if you were going to try to exclude anyone. So it was really like you'd have to hustle and like you'd have to get the prep involved. Everyone is like every skill set, come on, like we need you to make up numbers.
I see why you got into AFLW. You were like, I see a sport that needs some hustling. Yeah. I am here.
Yeah. I felt like it's what you had to do.
Yeah, I think I was saying to Maria earlier that I also didn't feel like my country town is like 300 people. Obviously, my school is a huge, thriving community. But I was saying to Maria that I also didn't feel like we were, like, the only ethnic family. But then when I think about it now as an adult, I was like, okay, who else were the ethnics? And it literally, there was, like, one family where the mum was from Denmark.
Yeah.
And I was like, look at this multicultural experience we're all having.
I feel a little bit the same, like looking back, especially through high school as well, like there weren't many people who were Asian at school. I think that like there were a lot of Italians around, so I feel like probably the Chinese side was more where I felt a little bit different. But then I came to Melbourne and I was like, there are like full Chinese people in Melbourne. And I was like, I'm just the half. Like, I'm not that Chinese. So it was... Yeah, I remember feeling like, I was a little bit different but didn't really realise that much at the time.
Now, playing a little bit into stereotypes here, if I think about Italian people and if I think about Chinese people, they are, in my mind, very different cultures. Mm-hmm. And how did you find that with both parts of your family, you know, maybe on one side being really emotive and perhaps on the other side maybe being a bit more withholding? What was your experience of that?
Yeah, it's probably something I maybe think a little bit more about as an adult, but probably not something I thought that much about growing up. But I guess, I feel like we spent a lot of time at our Nonna and Nonno's house because they lived in Markwood as well. So it wasn't just our house, it was their house across the paddock. So we'd spend like, it really is like 100 metres across the paddock. That's Nonna and Nonno's house. But we used to go there every night after school. And like Nonna yeah, she just would look after us and Nonna would pick us up and everything. But they were, yeah, very emotive. Lots of yelling, but not bad yelling, just loud.
We're just expressive.
Talking. Yeah, exactly. and then if I think about, my Gung on Mum's side, he was a lot more quiet and reserved, and we'd sort of spend school holidays there visiting him. I think the shared probably relationship was mostly through food and that sort of thing. But there was a bit of a language barrier for both sides because, we don't speak like Chinese or Italian, us kids, so we're just a disappointment on both sides, which is really nice.
Darcy has some family in the audience, so looking at them.
Well, my partner is Italian and she speaks Italian, and I've got my mum's brother here, Uncle Phil, Auntie Steph, Ollie and his partner as well, and they speak Chinese as well. So they're not disappointments. But I've got the mic, so it's not about me, guys.
So as an AFLW star, is that your way of gaining back?
This is, my redemption story. Still going.
Oh, my gosh. I, before we were going to meet tonight, I watched Bloodlines. And in that, your Nonna has a life motto that I would just like you to repeat for the whole audience, because I think it's one of my favourite life mottos ever.
She says, mangiare, giocare, cacare, which is eat, play, shit.
So 1403, everyone needs a, New Year's motto. That's it. We're giving it to you all.
Yeah, and we recently got a house, and I'm thinking live life, love like that. I'm feeling like maybe we should get a wood carving or something and get it up.
Put it in the entryway.
Yeah, I feel nice.
But get it in Italian so that people come in and they're like, oh my God, this guy's so cultural.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you know, you know.
Yeah, that's a good idea actually.
So when you moved to Melbourne, you moved in with your Gung, right? What was that experience like for you? For you and also for him? For this country kid to rock up?
Yeah, well, he was an extremely generous person. So, I remember I finished high school and then got into uni, so I didn't take a gap year or anything. But I was lucky. If Gung hadn't been in Melbourne, I probably couldn't have just come straight to Melbourne. I would have had to work for a year and that sort of thing. So it was really lucky to be able to come and stay with him. It was really lovely. I look back on it and I'm not many people have had the experience of living with one of their grandparents. I think I was there for maybe 2 or 3 years. So it was an extended sort of period of time.
And you guys were just housemates.
Yeah, we were just hanging out. it's really, as I said, there's a bit of a language barrier, so
that helps.
Maybe it was good. Maybe he could actually speak fine English and he was just pretending so he didn't have to make conversation.
That's my grandma. She literally, she's passed away now, but she literally was no, she doesn't speak any English, nothing. Her first language was Turkish, second language Farsi. But she was a hustler. If she needed, we would go to pick her up from the airport, and she's traveled by herself as a 75-year-old, and she's she's brought all the fucking blankets from the plane, the ones that have big printed on them, please do not take these. And she's getting pushed by some person from the plane with the blankets on her lap, clearly stealing them. I'm you have hustled this. You are fine. You can definitely navigate international travel. And you're out here and I'm trying to speak to her and she's sorry.
Yeah, no, I can't. I couldn't. She sounds amazing. She sounds she knows how to get stuff done.
Yeah, she would have done really well in your primary school. She would have been wrangling those children.
She would have run that job.
Yes.
So do you feel living with him for that 2-3 year period, you must have felt much more connected to your Chinese side of your family just by virtue of spending all this time with your Gung?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think The fact that we'd always come on holidays and stay there as well. Like it was always, his house was always a bit of a wonderland. So, so I used to love just being there. I guess living there, it was like people used to ask me at the time and I was like, it's awesome, but it is just like living with your granddad. Like it's, it has its limitations in certain ways, but, I really love it. And, just meal times and things like that, being able to just sit in each other's company is really nice, even if you're not chatting about too much. It was a nice time.
I have maybe a divisive question, but if you had to pick between Italian food or Chinese food, which one would you pick?
Just like Darcy's partner, who's in the audience and has Italian heritage, close your ears.
Listen.
That's a really difficult question because they're very different types of food.
Tell us what your favourite dishes are from both of them.
We were talking about the bitter melon that my gung used to cook, which I don't think I appreciated that much growing up, but now I would appreciate a lot more. He was a great cook. Like whenever he'd cook up like literally anything, he would make it delicious. He had like a bench that he'd fold up and there was like a massive wok there. So like he had such a great setup at home. But yeah, I don't know if I have like a particular favourite food. It was just like anything. He'd just cook a spread, and Steph's a very good cook, so, and you too, Phil. shout outs all around. and then on Nonna's side, on the Italian side, Nonna's lasagna is, it's so good. It's unlike anything I've tasted.
Are you good at cooking it?
No, I actually have never tried to replicate it, but I'm thinking like it might be a good idea to learn.
Yeah. I feel like family recipes, like you realise that they get lost so quickly. It's really hard. It's one of those things that we've talked about a lot because anytime I go and like spend time with my aunties, for instance, I'll be like, hey, can you like teach me how to make this dish? Whatever. My aunt just came and stayed with me for 1 month because that's what ethnic families do. And I was like, I really want to learn kashka bonamjun, the eggplant dish we just ate out the back. Sorry, guys. It was really good. but it's so hard because there's no measurements. And so like I'm writing in my book and she's like, cook eggplant until cooked. And I'm like, cool. Yeah, so this doesn't work for like my 30 minutes. Like what temperature would you put the oven on? And she's like, depends on your oven. And I'm like, well, I don't know about this situation. It's really hard.
I think Nonna, it's like she's like a witch doing a spell. Like when she's cooking, it's like, what's happening? Like I don't know what these things are like. Nothing's like marked or anything. So she's just grabbing portions of things that I don't even know what it is. So, but I'll have to maybe get her to cook it and just video the whole thing or something so I can slow it down.
A little YouTube tutorial.
Count each grain of salt falling in. Be like, oh my goodness.
I have this trouble because like Māori food is like really quite a basic food, but like one of the things that my dad like used to do a lot when we were children is lay a hangi, where you have to dig a hole in the ground. I live in a block of units. I cannot replicate that in my yard. I don't have a shovel. So whenever I see like a hangi in town, I'm like, was that in the ground or was that in like a steamer?
So you can do a version with a steamer.
Yeah, but it's like a whole big operation. Again, it's like this huge giant steam situation and they taste different.
Oh, they do.
Taste the ground.
Yeah. The ground really makes it, yeah.
You had a hangi recently when you went back to New Zealand.
Oh, I did, yeah. I went back to New Zealand for a wedding. My friend who's Māori and her stepdad laid a hangi. And it was mean. It was a great day. It was the day after the wedding. So I was like also hungover. And then like the hangi came up from the ground and I just like gravitated towards it and just went... I love the smell. The smell is taking me right back. Yeah, I loved it so much.
Did you spend much time when you were growing up? Like, did you go to China or go to Italy? Was that like something that your family did or not really?
No, not at all. So Bloodlines was the first time Well, actually, I'd been to Italy before, but more touristy vibe. Like, I can't even...
A tower of Pisa photo?
Like got the shot. Went to Rome, all those places, which was really nice, but didn't really go, like, down south where my family's from. But during Bloodlines, like, that opportunity popped up. And it was actually amazing, like, because Jack Silvani had done it a couple of years before, and I was working at the club, and I'd seen it sort of happen. And I said to my boss, I was like, oh, like, surely I should do the next Bloodlines.
Yeah,
like,
not one country, but two.
Everywhere. Yeah, and we kind of, like, laughed it off. And then, yeah, like, maybe a year or so later, he called me into the office and was like, we're going to do Bloodlines. And I was like, no way. And so it was very special. We wanted to go to China, but we couldn't due to having lots of camera equipment and things like that. They were like, no. Yeah. But we ended up going to Hong Kong, which is where my gung spent time before he came to Australia. Mm. So that was, that was very amazing. And we got to go to the house that my nonna and nonno used to live in Italy, in Conflenti. So that was, it was very special, sort of just being there and looking at all the houses, and I could see, like, everything about those houses was, like, what nonna and nonno have, like, replicated in Australia. And, like, even the other nonnas around, I was like, that's like a carbon copy of my nonna. Like, even the way you're walking, what you're wearing, like, your general energy. It was really sweet.
So just, I realised we didn't give you any context for what Bloodlines is. So
what
it's
is Bloodlines? That was really morbid.
A spell that Darcy did one time. So it's a documentary that Carlton Football Club commissioned, right? And so Darcy and their mum went to Italy and Hong Kong and then, like, also did, like, really sweet interviews with, like, the grandparents here and, like, your dad and stuff. And it's like, everyone should go and watch it. It's so funny. Like, there are so many key characters. And when you're describing this, like, going to the house that your nonna's from, there's this whole thing where this neighbour, like, accosts you. And you're like, should I go into this man's house?
He was so, he was Pino. He was like, grabbed me and was like, oh, like, I know. He was speaking Italian and I was like, I don't know what you're saying. But he was just like, come, and, like, brought us into his house and was, like, telling stories. And, it was so lovely. So I think he used to be neighbours with my nonna and nonno, and they'd spent a lot of time together. So he was, as soon as I said the surname, he sort of understood, and we had
he understood.
But that was really wonderful.
What was it like for your mum?
I think she firstly was just amazed that we'd get the opportunity to do that, but I think it was really special for her being able to go back and I guess because the club put in a lot of effort to sort of bring in, like, a story in and sort of, like, help us understand, like, the situations that were happening in the world that would have, I guess, meant that both sides wanted to come to Australia and everything like that. I found it really special being able to experience it with Mum, because there were moments that were quite emotional, and I was like, we didn't know what we were sort of signing up for. We were just up for it because it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. I think she loved that she was able to have that.
I didn't realise that it was specific to Carlton Football Club.
This is why I'm trying to get you to support Carlton.
Yeah, who should I barrack for? We'll start a poll.
Literally, I made Maria a Being Biracial friendship bracelet, like Taylor Swift inspired, for today, and I made it in Carlton colours because she's newly in her sporty era, so I'm making the pitch. It's a sad place. Like, you've got to... It's rough being a Carlton supporter.
should I support someone else then? Wait, I am interested, like, because it came from the football club themselves, do you find that your identity is celebrated in those spaces? AFL as a whole, like, it feels like you have to be, really, like, out there and going and doing these things as part of playing football, and, like, is that celebrated? It seems like it is.
Yeah, well, I think so, definitely. I feel like more and more, like, clubs are wanting to, like, I guess just like show different sides of players, and I think like people care about sport through the stories as well. Like it's not just Bash and Crash and Biffo and stuff. But we love that stuff as well. But yeah, I think it is celebrated. I've felt very supported through all like facets of my identity at the club. So it's nice.
Well, that's well, maybe this will be my gateway into sports. So it's worked.
Yeah, jump on board. Stronger together. Let's go.
That's the motto. You don't know that. That's the kind of motto. Yeah,
you'll
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And I'm from New Zealand, so like rugby, like I could watch a game of rugby. So I feel like transferable watching there, right? Right? Am I getting dragged?
It's close. It's close. It's pretty close.
But better because you're in it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You were a multicultural ambassador for the AFL, right? How did that come about?
Well, it's a bit of a funny story. So this was before AFLW was invented, before it was around.
By Darcy Bessier.
Yeah, I invented it, actually. So I remember one of my old teammates and friends, Daisy Pierce, was working at the AFL. And
icon of the sport, Maria.
She is an icon. Yeah. You must remember that.
Daisy Pierce.
Seriously, though. Yeah. but she, I think she was like, yeah, come over for a walk or something. Like, I want to chat to you about something. And I think she was living in Fairfield and we were just wandering. I don't know, there's like a river or something yeah. around there.
Setting the scene.
Yeah, the creek, something. And we were wandering and she said, oh, like I was chatting to some people at work and they want to like bring you on board the AFL as a multicultural ambassador. And I remember being like, but I'm not like multicultural. Like I was like, what? I was like, what do you mean? Like, I don't know.
What something, did Daisy say in response to I'm like, not multicultural?
She was like, oh, like, Daz, like, you kind of are, like, you know how, like, your mom's Chinese and, like, your dad's Italian? It's kind of like two cultures, like, you mean multi.
We're going to get her on Being Biracial next episode. Is going to be Daisy Pierce explaining Darcy's heritage.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. But it was a bit funny. But, you know, you don't, like, my mum always says, you don't know what you don't know. And yeah. Or like I guess you can flip it. You only know what you know.
Yeah.
So I guess always being what you are, you don't really notice that it's different until you do.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, yeah, I feel like as I've gotten older, I sort of look back and I'm like, oh, yeah, like there were quite a few like unique experiences. But that's sort of how that came about. And it was probably at a good stage too because I'd been playing women's footy with Darabin, which is like they're in the VFL. But yeah, I sort of had gotten to a point where I was like studying a bit and like footy was just a hobby and I was like, I probably should focus on doing more design stuff and make a living out of that. Like I'll never make a living out of footy. So I was like, this is a waste of time. But then, yeah, it was sort of a moment where I was like, oh, I can do other stuff through footy. It's not just, you know, chasing a sack of air around. Like I can do other stuff too. So it came at a good time.
And so as part of that role, were you going and talking to schools or like what kind of stuff did you do and how did kids feel about you being the person that was talking to them?
Yeah, well, it was pretty funny because there was no like AFLW around and like women's footy still, it was getting bigger but it was kind of still in the shadows a fair bit. So like I remember going to a school once and like kids had no idea like but I think they see like a texter and they're like just like throw themselves at you and like sign my hand like I remember like one boy was like sign my apple and I was like okay like
sign my
perishable sign the apple.
Has anybody got a texter?
Yeah. Damn.
Maru's tradition.
But yeah, I like it. It's fun. Like seeing kids is really fun and I guess part of the multicultural program and the infrastructure around it was about reaching communities who might not necessarily see football as a place for them or like their families might be new to the country so they like footy's pretty foreign. They might not really know how to navigate local leagues and things like that. So it was more just about, I guess, exposing them to players and kind of giving them an opportunity to have a kick.
That's really cool. I think like one of the things that we've discussed over the course of the podcast is like how important it is to like see yourself in places like that. Mm. So I feel like probably for those kids, they were probably like, wow, I can do that. Like,
It's pretty cool to think about. Like I often think of if AFLW was around when I was little, like I was pretty unbearable and obsessed with footy growing up. And I can't imagine like how wild I would have been if I had have seen like not men doing it as well.
Oh my God, I know.
It would have been too much.
Yeah. But this must be the vibe of like some of your teammates now who are coming through and like approaching footy from this lens where they're like their childhood. They've had AFLW. That's so exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. Like the kids drafted this year, like they've been watching AFLW since they were like 9 or 10. So pretty much from that age, they've known that, you know, if they progress with their footy, that's something they can do. So it's pretty wild. Like the you talk to the new draftees and they're just like, yeah, I've wanted this for so many years. And it's, it's just completely different to, I guess, what our mindset has been for a long time. Because we were just kind of playing footy and then AFLW became a thing and we were there and like had obviously worked hard to be there, but now it's a very, I guess the players feel like they've had a lot of purpose to get there, and it's been like a goal of theirs to reach that point, so it's pretty cool.
How did your gong feel about you playing AFLW or your nonna? Actually, I'm really interested in what their perspective of it was.
I think they've always known like we've loved sport and been very sporty kids, like all three of us. So like Nonna is funny. Like she was very supportive. Like she'd more just watch us play and be like, you have fun. But like she'd just be like, I don't really get it. Like, and it's fair. Like she never got to play like growing
up.
She was working. And the same with Dad as well. But yeah, she sort of would just laugh at us playing and how serious we'd get. And like even now, like with footy, she'd just kind of be like, you have a nice time? And I'll be like, yep. And she'd be like, that's good luck. Like she just says that. She just says, good luck. I'm like, thanks, Nonna. Like that's really nice.
Keeping you humble.
Yeah, that's it. And then, Gung, I think Gung was more like, why not soccer? Like he was like, soccer makes a lot more sense.
He's like, Matildas, have you heard? They're coming.
Yeah, he was like, you can go global with this sport. What exactly are you doing? but he was a Carlton supporter. So I think when I ended up at Carlton, he was pretty happy about that. And he was always very supportive too. I think sport's just a very different activity for them as well, being migrants, I guess. It's just not something they really got to do or their kids got to do that much.
Yeah. There's like a degree of privilege.
Oh, like, 100%. Yeah. It's huge. Like, and even talking about the multicultural ambassador role, like a lot of the kids we would get to see in schools, like they didn't get to play sport outside of school. Like sport was like the parents didn't have the opportunity to enroll them in sports and extracurricular activities. So it really is a very privileged space.
And it's interesting because it's actually one of the things that has been like kind of a through line between some of the other mixed race people that we've interviewed. Like often even, so we had an episode come out today with Lizzie Hu, an amazing comedian, and she was like, yeah, I was the only Asian in swim team. And like, but she was like, that's how I was like proving myself on the playground. I was like, I'm not different. Like I might be the only Asian on swim team, but I'm here and I'm beating you. And so it's been interesting because quite a few people have talked to us about the way that they kind of use sport, especially when you're young, to try and fit in the playground, which I think is just so interesting.
Mm. Yeah, I think Dad, he always wanted to teach us really good sport skills because he was like, you know, if you want to, like, sport is like a currency at school. Like if you can play sport, like then you know, like you'll find people that you can play with and they'll respect you being able to do that. So I think for him it was a really important skill that he could give us kids.
You didn't have that, Maria?
I mean, I played netball and I was a goal shoot, so I just stood there most of the time. Yeah, yeah, and I just like got on the team because I was tall. Yeah. So yeah. That was me. Yeah.
That's fine. Work smart, not hard. Yeah. That's good. If you got the height, use it.
Exactly. I was like, I'm the closest to the hoop.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I want to ask you about something that happened last season. So one of my favourite Carlton players, Mua, was racially vilified. And I'm just really curious as a... Obviously, we, like, see the statements that everyone puts out about it. But I'm just curious as, like, a playing group, when something like that happens, how do you guys come together and what do you do in those kind of moments afterwards?
Yeah. It was pretty terrible. Like, someone from the stands just yelled something out to her. And I saw her after the game and I thought, because it was a pretty, like, we got smashed in the game, and I thought maybe it had something to do with that, but she was very distraught, which wasn't, like, not her usual demeanor.
She's, like, smiling, yeah, like, the most friendly.
She,
like,
is. She's a very bubbly person. So, we got told about it, and I think this is really, like, it's terrible, because it had happened to her a few years before, and... Yeah, and the club hadn't dealt with it very well at all. Like, I think she sort of had to deal with it on her own, because they thought it would be, like, I don't want to say a distraction, but they felt like it would disrupt the team, which it absolutely would, but because it needs to.
Yes.
Because racism is very disruptive. But it shouldn't, that shouldn't be a reason for us to not know and be able to support her. So I think... From the first time it happened, she felt very isolated, and a few of us knew, but it just wasn't handled very well. And she was probably made to feel more shame around it rather than feel like we had her back and she was able to feel safe at footy. But so this time around, it was very much the whole team was notified through sort of small groups. So we have, like, mentor groups. So the leaders reached out just to ensure that everyone was across it, and we could support her as teammates the best we can. There's a process the club has to go to see if there's anything they can do in terms of, like, I guess, terminating membership or, like, education programs or things. Like, it's a really terrible... terrible thing. Like, you just, like, you can see how much it impacts people, it just wasn't a good time for her.
Thank you for telling us that as well. Yeah. And, like, what an awful experience. I feel like it definitely happens more, from my knowledge, in the men's league, but having it impact on the women's league as well.
I think that's something that really upset us all as well, like, because we feel like we've worked really hard to create, like, a really welcoming and, like, a space where we just don't tolerate that. Like, it's a very different feeling being in a W game to, like, an M game. Like, they're just different makeups. And I think people go to the game with different, not intentions, but you just know, like, at a W game, like, it's just geared differently. So, to know that had happened and that, like, I don't know, it feels like, yeah, like the space has been violated in a way. So that wasn't, it wasn't good at all. But I think we were able to be a little bit better in terms of supporting her the second time around, which is, like, it's terrible that it happened again. But,
I think it's really difficult because, like, obviously we want AFLW to grow, and we want people that are going to AFLM matches to go to AFLW matches too. But I agree, I feel like it has been a different kind of community vibe at the games. And then even I went to the grand final last year, and I was like, oh, there are some people here that I've never seen at AFLW matches before. And I'm like, that's so good. And then I hear about things like this and I'm like, stay away. Like, it's really messed in my head.
Yeah, it is hard. But, yeah, you kind of hope that, like, if most of us are creating a space like this, then when people who come in who might not normally fit in well in that space or want to be part of a more of a, like, collaborative crowd rather than a angry crowd, I don't know, because it's better for everyone. Like, even if they don't realize it yet, like, I'm sure if they come in and, yeah, assimilate, you know. Nah.
To the good side, to the good side.
No, you know what I mean.
This is the last question I'm going to ask you now, for now. But how important is it for you to show up in that space with your whole self and all different parts of it?
I think I probably couldn't play footy if I couldn't do that. Like, I think, it's quite a full-on environment and requires, like I always feel like when I play my best footy, like, it's very expressive and can be quite emotional and everything like that. And I think if you're not able to express all parts of yourself, then, like, that just can't happen. So, yeah, I think it's very, very, very important. And, yeah, I'm very proud that I'm able, like, I feel like I'm in a very supportive space to be able to be that.
At the Carlton Football Club.
At the Carlton. Mikey Blues.
I've got to write that down. Thank you so much for having a corridor. We're going to bring you back out later. You're not going anywhere. Give it up for Darcy. We'll see you soon. Welcome back from our intermission. A very mysterious person is doing this back announcing right now, who we haven't seen at all tonight already. But guys, gals, and non-binary pals, get ready for Aurelia St. Clair!
Hi! This is a little different setup to usual. There's usually a stage, so I'm a lot closer to you than usual, but don't throw any tomatoes at me. I'm going to tell you, like, a little bit about myself. I'll tell you about something that happened to me a few weeks ago. This guy comes up to me and he asks me, "Where are you from?" Just at the tram stop. And then I say to him, "Oh, me? I'm just from Melbourne." And then he says to me, "You don't look like you're from Melbourne." Yeah. So then I said to him, "You don't look like you can afford to talk to me." Bye. That's the vibe. No, but I do get that question a lot, you know, where are you from? And I totally get it. I know that people are just curious and they just want to get to know me better. But I also know that they're asking because they want to know, how dangerous is she? You know, is she in a gang? I mean, I could be. Because I do actually come from a country that has a history of racially motivated gang violence. I'm from Germany. If you know, you know. And I know what some of you are thinking, how, why? But yes, there are brunettes in Germany. But I moved here to Australia 10 years ago, and when I moved here, there are, like, a lot of things I had to learn. First of all, of course, English, the language, because there's things that I can say in German and they make perfect sense. And then I translate it to English and it makes no sense at all. So, for example, in German, I can say, "Du gehst mir auf den Keks." That means as much as, "You're being really annoying right now." Literal translation, "You're stepping on my biscuits." Or the Aussie version, "Mate, stop stepping on me Tim Tams." It has been my 10-year anniversary is coming up from kind of moving to Australia. And it feels quite nice because now I finally actually applied for my Australian citizenship. Thank you, thank you. And, you know, I know Australia isn't real. But it still feels nice. I just feel like a little bit more at home here after being a permanent resident for some time. I just feel like now that I've applied for my citizenship, now I can say some really Australian things. Like I can finally say the C word. The C word in Australia, of course, is colonizer. Tricked you cunts. I've been using that one for a while. No, but I'm not leaving now. You know, you're stuck with me. It's too late. I actually got married to an Australian last year. Thank you, thank you. Actually, I'll tell you this. I got gay married to an Australian last year. Yay! Because you know what? People like straight marriage, but they love gay marriage. And, you know, I don't blame anyone for that because I feel like with straight marriage, you're kind of still like, she's losing something. With gay marriage, you're gaining the world. You don't even have to change your last name unless you want to. But basically what happened was I found the first lesbian who wasn't into camping. And then I married her. Because you have to lock that shit down. Way too many queers are into camping, you know. It's just, like, for me, being gay is hard enough in the city. I don't need to do it in the forest with no reception and, like, a small town full of homophobic people. Babe, we have homophobia at home. It's okay. I love being married. You know, a lot of people my age, marriage is sort of optional for my generation, I feel. And I agree with that. I don't think it's required. But a lot of my friends specifically are like anti-marriage because they don't believe in the institution of marriage and they're afraid of commitment. Yeah. But my wife and I, we're both mentally ill. So being committed to an institution. It's fine. We love it. Are you guys all locals to the area? Yeah. Anyone from West Side Footscray here? Yes. We just recently moved to Footscray. We love Footscray. So every morning we walk our dog and quite often we run into the same people, which is nice, a sense of familiarity. And there's this guy and like whenever he sees us, he's like, lesbians. I hate you. So I think he really likes us. But it is nice like living in Melbourne's like inner suburbs because generally what happens when we walk our dog is my wife and I will be holding hands and somebody will walk like the opposite direction to us and, you know, they make eye contact and then they'll smile. And if it's a boomer, I assume it's like their first smile for the day. And then sometimes they nod their head and they say something like, good morning. Just so we know that they're allies. And I'm here for it. I love it. Like, sometimes it just makes me feel like we need to take marriage away from the straights. Not for long, just for 1 or 2 years. Just so they appreciate it again. And also so all that, like, backlog from COVID can clear up. It's really just a practical thing. But mainly so they can appreciate it again because we all know that nothing adds a little bit of sparkle. Like oppression. And I speak from experience. Something that happens as well, and like I don't know if you know, if you have friends who are like, I can't meet anyone, I have no luck dating, I love giving advice. My advice is get a dog. Get a dog. Getting a dog shows you have like a level of commitment, right? You're always out walking, you're meeting people. But mainly what happens is when you have a dog, people just come up to you. They just come up to you in the street and they're like, oh my God, you're so cute. What's your name? Are you a boy? Or a girl? And it's usually at this point that I realize that they're talking to my fucking dog. Like, my dog gets in the dog park when somebody doesn't know whether my dog is a boy or a girl. They refer to my dog as they, them. My dog gets asked for his pronouns more than me. Meanwhile, you know, I'm non-binary and he doesn't speak English. It's fine. Like, I get it. I know it's intimidating. But also, you know, it took me a long time to come out as non-binary because for the longest time I thought that being non-binary was only for annoying white people. And then I realized it's for annoying people of all races. So you could be non-binary. But I was mainly worried that somebody would come up to me and be like, oh, you're non-binary? Name three of their songs. And I've just never listened to Björk. But, you know, I've told you I'm married and stuff, and like, coming out as non-binary, coming out as gay was like a whole other story for me. But when I first came out, I did like a lot of reading and research because I just wanted to make sure that I was like, you know, making the right decision. And in my research, I came across this study about heterosexual couples. And it said that for straight couples who are married, for the man in that relationship, just the fact of having a wife makes this man's life so much better and so much easier that it adds 5 to 10 years to his lifespan. And I read that and I thought, I want that for myself. And then I also thought, what an easy way for me to shorten another man's life. Simply by not dating him. While I'm at it taking like another woman out of the dating pool, that's 10 to 20 years right there. And I can't see all of you, but I feel like there's at least a few bisexuals in the crowd tonight. So I just want y'all to think about the type of life you want to live. All I'm saying is, we can kill them all. That's my set. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh. You're hilarious. Now, Aurelia, Melbourne International Comedy Fest is coming up.
Yes.
And you are putting on a show.
I am.
What's it called?
It's called Can I Be Mean for a Minute? So I will be mean for more than 1 minute, but...
Get tickets. Where can they get tickets?
At Comedy Festival, melbournecomedyfestival.com.au.
/ Aurelia. Now, again, we always ask the same question. What's your mix? Tell us.
I'm German Cameroonian.
And you said that you've been in Melbourne for 10 years, yes. 10 whole years. What prompted the move?
My ex.
Messy. Classic. And so you came over here with them and then settled down, or what was the vibes?
I went through like every visa under the sun and eventually I got my permanent residency through another ex.
And now we're stuck with you.
You know, and now I'm here.
Now, I have a question for all of us, because we're all, like, I'm not from Melbourne. You're not from Melbourne, not from Melbourne. What is it about Melbourne that we love? Like, what is it?
It's not the weather.
No, it's why my wheatgrass failed.
Your wheatgrass did fail. I feel like for me, I'm from like a really small little town, the bottom of New Zealand. And at that point in time, I was filled with a lot of white people. And I'm like a big, brown, queer girl. And so I felt like I couldn't like be my whole self in that place. And that's probably more of an indication of like me and where I was at the time that I left. But when I live in Melbourne, like how I feel here, I've lived here for 9 years, so close to your 10-year anniversary. But yeah, I feel like I can be every single part of myself here.
I agree with that sentiment of like just being whoever you are is so easy here because everyone is encouraged to express themselves. Like walking down my street the other day. There was this guy with a top hat and a twirled up moustache and he was wearing like leather boots and skinny jeans. And I was like, I would have been in love with you 10 years ago.
That's the ex that got you the first visa.
Pretty much him. But you see people dressed so differently and expressing themselves so differently here that even in other cities in Australia that have maybe, I don't want to say Sydney has a similar vibe, but even Sydney I think is more like people are kind of dressing alike and acting alike, especially in certain areas, where in Melbourne, no matter where you are, you can kind of find odd pockets.
I agree with both of you. And I think, yeah, it would be hard to play footy in Wangaratta as well. So,
they don't have a team.
They do have a team now, actually. They have a women's team, the Rovers, but I'm a Magpie. If you're from Wangaratta, you're either a Rover or a Magpie. So I'm a Magpie. So I can't play.
They're lost.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it's weird because you kind of reconceptualize your identity when you come to the city often. And it's always funny for me when I go home that I kind of forget that like I'm a Melbourne version of myself now. I'm not the Kilmore version of myself. Or like I went away with some friends and we were like driving through Kilmore and friends that are in this audience were like, let's go to the local pub. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm not taking this like car of queers like to Kilmore pub. No way. I remember when that place like had topless waitresses. Like we are staying away.
Wait, why are we not going?
Speak for yourself.
Oh my God, imagine that, Kilmore, queer hub, country Victoria. Red Lion's really coming through.
It's a new Dalesford. Tell the lesbians. Let's go, lesbians, let's go.
So, yeah, I think it's always a bit funny then when you return home and then you come back into the city and you kind of remember those differences. And so when you were talking about, like, I don't want to go camping, I don't want to go to that homophobic town, I was like, yes, you are preaching to the choir. We went that same trip, we went away. Like, we went into the Country Bakery and it was, like, BLM time. It was, like, ACAB, blah, blah, blah. And they had, like, literal cookies, like, police people cookies. And I was like, this would not be, like, Australian flag cookies. And I was like, this would not be flying in Footscray. Like, it's bizarre.
And you just know those cookies wouldn't be good.
No, absolutely
not. Not made with love.
You can taste the homophobia, yeah.
Baked with, like, hate and exclusion.
Crumbled ashes in your mouth, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I love living in the city and I love being able to express these things. I think even on the stage we have, like, all these different little pockets here. It's quite funny. I like it.
Yeah, I recently had this like thing where my aunt lived with me for a month. And so it's funny because like today I wanted to bring this carpet because I want this conversation to feel like we're like sitting in my house and we've got my table and we've got the things. But my aunt, she brought me a Persian rug in her suitcase. Like the majority of what she brought for me was the Persian rug. It's like amazing. And I guess it was funny because I was like, oh, Mary, this is so nice. And I knew that when she was giving that to me, it was coming also with like a little bit of guilt because the Persian rug had been promised to me if I was to get married. And I was like, oh, they've given up hope. Like, or I have won, like didn't have to get married, got the Persian rug. And then I like put it down in the laundry room. I was like, great, like, for a display. And she was like, oh, no, okay. Like, it's high traffic in the lounge room. You've got to move that into the bedroom. Like, and I was like, okay, well, first of all, that's an assumption. But second of all, okay. And so I put it in the bedroom. I was like, great. And then she was like, okay. So it comes afternoon time and she's like going into my room and she's flipping the rug. And I was like, Mary, what are you doing? She was like, It's you can't have sun on the rug. So you've either got to close your curtains at 3 p.m. when the light is streaming through your window, or you've got to flip your rug. And I was like, you've given me a pet. Like, I don't understand. And so just for context, that it's not this rug. I like saw the look on your face where you were like, I was standing on that.
With my auntie,
I'm like, I'm sorry, auntie, I'm sorry.
But it's so funny for me because I think about little things like that where I, like, just the thing of the rug and now its presence in my house, and I've adopted, like, 75-year-old Persian auntie vibes in relation to my rug. I'm not bringing it here tonight because I'm respecting it and all that it's worth. But I'm, like, curious with you guys, are there small things that you feel like you do, just everyday things that help you, like, connect to your heritage or culture? Cultures?
Well, I like to have Tiger Balm in my locker, so I usually take it on the road. Sometimes I'll apply it, but sometimes I'll just smell it. It is. It's quite calming. You know, if you're feeling a bit tired, just dab a bit on the eyes and gets you right up, ready to go for the game. So that's probably, that's the one thing that's sprung to mind.
I love those little things. At the moment, my TikTok For You page, minefield, hellhole that I'm stuck in. But one of the things that's happening in Aotearoa at the moment is Polyfest. So Polyfest is like this big gathering of kapa haka groups, like dance and song groups from around the country. And so my TikTok For You page, like, she knows that I'm Māori. And she's showing me all of the kapa haka groups, and I'm sitting there at like 3 a.m. being like, man, you should really go to sleep. This is so beautiful. So that little everyday thing, my TikTok For You page knows what I'm about, and it's serving it up.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like little things like I use a lot of spice.
Seasoning your food.
I'm seasoning my food. That's my Cameroonian side. And then I'm really meticulous about how I do things, which is my German side. But the thing you said about Tiger Balm made me think of Vicks VapoRub, which was such a staple for me growing up, but my wife just never had it because she's white. And but then I was like, have you had this? And we were sick and she loved it. So she's a convert.
Oh my gosh. I love that the takeaway for the audience is Tiger Balm and Vicks VapoRub.
And keep your rugs out of the sun.
Oh my God.
I think one of the conversations that Kate and I have been having a lot, like as we're making season two of the podcast, is that like it's not just those like big, huge things where like maybe you learn a language or you go to, you know, like see where your family is from. Like those things, they are big and awesome and powerful. But like it is just like sometimes the smell of Tiger Balm, sometimes the smell of Vicks, and those things are like just as important, even though they are like quite little, right?
Yeah, and I feel like someone in the locker room would, like, see that Tiger Balm and be like, hey, yeah, like, my family too. Like, and that's a point of connection and that's beautiful.
100%. Yeah, I've seen a few other people using Tiger Balm. Like, it's a bit more mainstream than I thought. But that's okay.
Okay. I was going to say, I've got some Tiger Balm, but that's just because I'm weak and my muscles hurt all the time. And I spent 2 months in Southeast Asia, so...
I feel like I saw on your Instagram recently that you had like a tomato day or something. Yes. Is that your partner driving this and you're just like taking the cultural cred?
Yeah, it was Emily's family. They mentioned tomato day and I was like, when are we doing it? It was Emily's family.
Can you tell us about tomato day for those that don't know or watch Looking for Isla Brandy?
Do you have any left?
Yes, we have jars, but yeah, it was like making passata. So the family all came together, lots of cutting up tomatoes and going through the process of, I think they made just under 200 jars, so that'll last.
Oh,
couple,
wow.
Yeah.
Yes, family coming through, and you didn't bring any for us.
I didn't bring any, sorry, we've gone through it all already. So.
Actually?
No, we haven't.
No. You will when you do Nonna's lasagna recipe.
Exactly. Yeah, I will.
Yeah, I feel like that because of did you watch Looking for Isla Brandy as a kid or read the book?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh my God. None of you.
Oh. I'm not
what
from
about
here.
You, Em?
I'm
have
so
you
sorry.
Did you have a Looking for Isla Brandy moment? Yes. See? They have a big tomato day in Looking. Go do some
I'll
study.
I'll watch it. I did hear there was like a theatre performance, wasn't
there? There was, but you didn't go?
But I didn't go.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that Kate's like kind of like, not realisation, but like Kate's like character that she like loved when she was a kid, like and like saw herself in, was this like Italian-Australian looking for Alibrandi.
Yeah, it was just for me, that was like on screen. That was the closest person I could find that was like from like a big, loud, emotional family. And so I just like hyper, like over-identified with someone that is not at all my cultural mix. And like really, and there's like a line in it that I just love, which is like, basically Telstra would go out of service if it wasn't for like all the nonnas like calling each other to gossip. And I did that just like applies to Persian aunties too, absolutely. Is there something that you have from your childhood that you remember like identifying with and being like, I feel seen?
Well, I actually read Looking for Alibrandi in German. And
what? But we didn't plan this.
I realised that I read it when everyone was talking about the play and stuff, and I was like, that sounds so familiar, and I went back into, you know, deep memories. And I remember the school uniforms, finding her dad, everything like that. But at the time, I had no context for Australia. But I really enjoyed the book, but like a lot of the things I was like, oh, that's so exotic, they have school uniforms. Or like, you know, I feel like her boyfriend was like a few years older than her or like something
like
that.
He had a motorbike.
Yeah. So I remembered a lot of those things, but I just didn't see it. So I did not answer the question. But I do have memories of like reading lots of different books from different countries that had been translated into German, like young adult. And I recently found a Zadie Smith book in German at Savers for $3.99, and it's called White Teeth.
Yeah.
But reading it is just really overwhelming for me because it's like a story that's really similar to mine, because it's like a girl who's a Jehovah's Witness. I grew up a Jehovah's Witness. And the fact that I found a book in German just to me was like
that's insane.
Like stars aligned moment. I'm just like in the first few chapters, but I'm already feeling really connected to it in some ways.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love that. Also, Jehovah's Witness?
Knock, knock.
No follow-up questions.
It's got to be your next show, surely. Just
come to the show.
It's just you visiting us instead.
Yeah, the show comes to you.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit like, it's so heavy to talk about sometimes, but I also don't feel so heavy about it now. But people are like, what do you mean? Your mum wouldn't give you a blood transfusion. I'm like, no, of course not. Like, it's just questions that people have about Jehovah's Witnesses, or even that I'm telling Tamara, she's like, what do you mean? Like, she doesn't have any of this context. And then I forget that not everyone grew up like I did. Mm-hmm. And I actually found one of their pamphlets in my letterbox the other day. If you find them, do not go to that assembly.
Just an advisory.
Yeah.
Warning. And was it your mum that brought that religion into your house?
Yeah, so my mum was a single mum, and when I think my parents split, she was really looking for like a community. She'd grown up religious in Cameroon, which has been colonized, obviously, with Catholicism being sort of the main Christian religion. So I think she wanted to have something similar and have like values and stuff like that to pass on to me. And I mean, they knocked on her door, and that's not something that like happens where people like come out to seek you to come to their community. Yeah. And I have a lot of like empathy for her now, because I can see how being alone in a country and somebody's like telling you about the Bible, which you think is good, and you're like, oh, great.
And you're raising a child by yourself and you're trying to find community. Yeah, all of those things. I was raised by a single mum as well. And like, Raywin, love her so much. She has friends now. She didn't so much have friends then. So I can see how, like, that, you know, that could have easily happened, yeah, as well.
And I think it's something that, like, I've been talking to friends about a lot, where a lot of us aren't religious, and so we're, like, looking for, like, rituals and things to make you feel connected to something bigger than you. And I feel like that, like, doing this table, that's that for me in a really nice way. Like, I was literally... It's been like a crazy month and my wheatgrass failed. And so on. And Darcy's family members just told me that there is a supermarket I could buy wheatgrass at during the break, and I'm feeling real bad about it. I didn't know it existed. And I've made it my whole personality. It's really unfortunate. But, like, Nowruz starts as a 13-day, like, festival, and it started yesterday, 2 p.m. It's great. And the night before Tuesday night, I was like, not doing the table, half scene's not for me. My mum never did the table when I was growing up. Like, it was something that, yeah, she was like, we're just like an everyday Australian family. We don't have half scene. And so she never did it. And so it's me that in my, like, 20s, while I've been trying to connect to my culture, that's been, like, creating this ritual. So I was like, who's going to know? Like, no one's going to know. And then I was... like, sitting at home and being like, oh, no, I'm going to know. And so I was, like, rushing, and I was, like, grabbing everything out. And, like, the pudding is supposed to be, like, you make the pudding. I got the pudding in a can. And, like, we did the slapdash thing, but it feels really nice that then I was, like, I, like, lit the candles, and I was, like, sitting in my house by myself, and I was like, oh, this is a bit nice. And I, like, was like, look at me connecting to 3,000 years of Persian culture, like, with these beautiful flowers. Like, it's nice. Little things like that feel so special.
Yeah, ritual can exist outside of hectic religions.
If you want to convert, have I got the table for you?
I like the look of that table. But I don't know if I have room.
Now, we are almost at time, but one thing that I got backstage just before was a texter. And you know what we've got? We've got some apples. So, Darcy, you're going to sign an apple. You're going to sign an apple as well, Aurelia.
Oh, my God. What's the significance of this? Oh.
Come on.
It's actually a really sacred... No, it's not. we were just having a bit of a joke, a bit of a giggle about Darcy as the multicultural ambassador, and kids, when they see a texter, they want something signed. And a kid had asked... Darcy to sign an apple. So we're making it a reality here today, guys. Yeah. And it's going to be sitting on Kate's half-seen table for
the rest of the month. Before I sell it on eBay, if anyone wants exclusive, just
dry it.
It's so good. Really, do you want to sign the other side? Or do you want to sign your own apple? You're up to you.
So it's biracial.
Multiracial apple. So while Aurelia is signing the sacred apple, I won't sign one. Kate sees me all the time. Yeah, she sees too much of my writing and listens to too much of my voice, so I won't sign one for you. But while Aurelia is signing the apple, I just want to say thank you so much to The Round and the Wheeler Centre for having us here and, you know, for getting us some absolutely killer guests. Darcy Vesio, give it up. And Aurelia St. Clair, give it up again.
You definitely need to go to Aurelia's comedy show. We're all going to be there, so come to see us at Aurelia's comedy show.
Oh my gosh, the apple has been signed. The apple will be out in the foyer after the... I want to say a big thank you to you all as well for coming along. If you aren't local, coming over to this side of town, we're so grateful that you've come and supported us. So thank you so much. Give yourself a round of applause as well. And we are done. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.